I had a car at the time and I initially was frustrated because I had a lease car. I'd just lost my job. And then I sort of flipped it round and went, actually, I've got a car and I've got no job. So I can go on a little road trip. And I did a road trip round all the national parks in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the Distance Hiker podcast with me, your host, Matthew. It is, as always, and I say this every time, and I truly mean it, wonderful to have you on the show. Now, as a little precursor to the show itself, I know a few of you have been listening to the show for a little while. I'm going to get this in at the beginning because I always add it at the end. But if you enjoy the show, if you've enjoyed the episodes I've put out so far, this is episode 19, so if you've listened to all the episodes, then thank you so much. I would love if you could rate the show on Apple Podcasts and also subscribe on Spotify Podcasts. It just helps the show to be mentioned in their kind of organic algorithm and for more people to find out about the Distance Hike podcast. And if you really want to give us a bit of kudos, a bit of good karma, perhaps share the show on Facebook or Instagram on your stories. That'd be absolutely incredible if you could do that. Anyway, today I have got Becky the Traveller, who many of you will probably know if you're into the outdoors, which I hope you are because you're listening to this show. Becky is an owner of a website called Becky the Traveller. And she also owns Peak District Walks, two very popular websites which most likely will have appeared in your searches when looking for information about hiking trails and particular long distance walks or smaller walks in the Peak District. She runs these websites as a full-time business, and as somebody who is, I guess, also a content creator with doing this, I was pretty interested to find out more about how she started and how it's going. So we talk a bit about Becky and her business and how she got started and kind of where it's going and some of the challenges she has and also what it's like to be a full-time hiker, which isn't quite the reality that you'd expect. So if you're into hiking in the outdoors, as I said, you should be listening to this, you're going to love this episode. And also if you're into business too, then you're also going to love this episode because it's got a little bit of businessy stuff in it as well. We also, of course, talk about long distance trails. In particular, we discuss the Beacons Way in the Brecon Beacons and also the Pennine Way. And finally, we finish up and wrap up the episode talking about van life. So, without further ado, I bring you this fantastic episode recorded with Becky the Traveller. I hope you enjoy it and enjoy the show. Pest, because I think most of my guests who've come on have come on through me sort of repeatedly going, are you free anytime soon? You know, come on, et cetera, et cetera. I spoke to Abby Barnes last week and she's busy because, you know, like yourself, she's got a lot going on. And she just laughed at me because she knew how many messages I sent her to try and get her on. So my thing with this that I've learned is perseverance is key because most of the people I speak to are busy and, you know,
yeah. I did genuinely want to do it, but you know, it was like half eight.
Yeah, it's and I late. Like, I know.
Am I going to be able to string a sentence together?
I know. To be honest, I feel like that doing it some nights where I get home from work and I just go, I really enjoy doing it, but I'm so tired. And there's been one or two times, once I get on, I'm fine. But before that, I'm always feeling really tired. And there's been one or two cancellations here and there. And I'm a little bit disappointed.
You can imagine, can't you, if something goes off during the day and you're like, not like.
Exactly.
Because I've only ever recorded them during daytimes before, of like morning or sort of early afternoon.
And that's a great time to do it. But
let's give this 8:30 malarkey a run. And it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Because it's like, it's not exactly like ridiculously late, but it was more like for, you know,
of course,
constructing a sentence and actually having a nice conversation.
Yeah, 100%. It does make it more difficult. But now I appreciate you pushing through into the late hours of the evening.
I'm just going to take my shoes off. So I've not taken my shoes off since I got in. Well, that... I've been out on the van.
Have you?
So I've literally, I literally got in from the van, grabbed some pasta for dinner. And then I was just doing some work on the website and I was like, oh shit, it's half eight.
So right. good interlude. I wanted to ask you about the van. And you're based in Nottingham, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, and you're not far away either, are you?
I'm other side of Mansfield, the Leicester.
You really should have done this in person, Matt.
we really should. Yeah, I don't know. You're allowed to at the moment because of COVID, but it would have been good to. But I only have one microphone. I did think about doing some in person ones, but logistically, it's actually easier just to do this now. So
that's fine.
But yeah, so you live in Nottingham, so it'd be nice to meet up at some point and go for a walk. And
definitely,
that'd be cool. I actually met Chrissy on the weekend, who you
did you?
Yeah, went for a walk with her. And she said, "Oh, I'm we're talking about people like we knew." And she went, "Oh, I'm going on a walk with Becky." And I was like, "Becky who?" And she was like, "You know, you." And I was like, "Oh right, you know, cool. You guys know each other." She goes, "Oh, she lives in
just call me Becky the traveler."
Yeah, and she goes, "Oh, Becky lives in Nottingham." I'm like, "She lives in Nottingham." I'm like, "Oh yeah, so there you go." You're doing the what was it? The
Beacon's Way.
Asset. Yeah.
Yeah, doing it in like less than 2 weeks actually. Yeah. So yeah.
Wicked. That sounds good. Yeah, small world, isn't it? I guess, but I'm working out quite quickly because I'm very new to this sort of online community of outdoorsy folks. That it's a very close knit community.
Everyone knows everyone. Yeah, literally.
I totally get that now. And initially, I didn't see it, but I can see the connections and all of that, and it's nice. Like, it's a really, really good community, and it really sucks you in, especially as I'm beginning to sort of get to know more people within it. But anyway, I'm going to jump in and start firing questions your way.
Yes, sorry. Right. Yeah, otherwise it will go on forever.
No, that's fine. I've got a tendency to ramble on as well. So, thank you very, very much for joining me today. On the podcast. I've been well aware of you and your website for quite some time. It's a fantastic website you have, Becky the Traveller, and also Peak District Walks. Is that the other one?
Yes.
Yeah. And remarkable because, you know, you're one of, you know, that the rare individuals who actually manages to make a career and a living out of what you do. Which in the eyes of many, and I want to talk a bit about that today because I think it's just interesting and I'm sure that on a personal level, I'm interested in it, as you could probably gather. But also I suspect that, you know, the idea of hiking for a living, as some people would probably see it, which I know is more to it than that, it is of interest to people because you've essentially seen something that you are interested in and you've taken the leap and you've just gone, right, well, I'm going to turn this into my whole life. And that is, you know, it's cool. It's remarkable when people do that. You know, you are working the dream job, I guess. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And then obviously a bit about long distance hiking, a bit about your story and anything else you want to talk about, really. So I really wanted to start then on the history. Like, so where did your interest in the outdoors really begin? Where was the starting point for you, or starting points?
I don't remember like a specific, like, you know, a specific hike or, you know, X happened or whatever. But I feel like it was just, I've always been an outdoorsy person. I've always enjoyed sports and physical exercise. So throughout my life, if you look at all the different sports I've had a go at, I used to play rugby union at university. I used to do Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art. Done a bit of running, so I've run a few half marathons, like road half marathons. Now I do more trail running. So throughout my life, I've always had an outdoory active theme, because that's what I just enjoy doing. So I don't think there was really a pinpoint. I mean, the only thing I can kind of think, you know, at school I used to be volunteering to be the person in sports day that would like literally do every, you know, I'd be the girl in our class that would do every single event because nobody else wanted to do anything. So that's kind of like my outdoorsy, you know, or outdoorsy physical exercise background, really. The hiking side of things came in a bit later, and I used to do walks in the Peak District. Me and my brother and sister, we used to go to the Peak District on the train from Nottingham to Sheffield, and then Sheffield on the little shuttle train to Edale. And we used to do pretty much the same hike or a variant of similar hikes every single time, all around that sort of area, linked in with the train line, basically, because at the time I didn't drive. So it was, you know, getting there, public transport. And then I started to do more hikes abroad. So I used to do, I did some big trips. I did things like Mount Kilimanjaro. I did the Annapurna circuit. I did the Inca Trail. So I did loads of big hiking trips, but they were all abroad, which seems absolutely bizarre now when I reflect on, yeah, you know, the amazing hikes we've got in the UK. But that's what happened. I was kind of like working in a busy job. I'd save my holidays up. I'd have like a month off at a time. I had a really good boss who liked traveling as well. So I'd save up. I'd have like a month off at a time and I'd go off somewhere and I'd do some traveling and I'd do some hiking. And it wasn't until I was made redundant in 2017 that I kind of had that bit of a wake-up call and kind of was like, oh, actually, right, I probably should put going abroad on hold for a little while because of finances. And I thought, oh, I'll start exploring a bit of the UK. And then really, I did like a road trip then. So I had a car at the time, and I initially was frustrated because I had a lease car. I'd just lost my job. And then I sort of flipped it round and went, actually, I've got a car and I've got no job. So I can go on a little road trip. And I did a road trip round all the national parks in the UK. So there's 15 national parks in the UK. I did a road trip, spent about 2 months travelling round between them. And I went hiking in every single one. And I had maps, I had a compass, but I didn't really know what I was doing with them. I had a rough idea. I wasn't a beginner, but I'd never been on a map reading course or anything like that. And I went out and I went the wrong way a few times, and you know, those sorts of things. I didn't get it. You know, didn't get ridiculously lost or anything like that. But it just sort of sowed that seed for, wow, the UK is cool. And it, like, you know, I was like, God, the Brecon Beacons, I had an amazing time there. And I was like, God, I didn't even know this national park was here and it was this beautiful. And so it really, that was a real sort of wake up call for me when I did that trip, really.
Wow. And before you were made redundant from your job as well, that's, you're working another job, or was it the same job where you really didn't enjoy it and decided at that point to start your website too, to start documenting essentially?
Yeah, it was the same job. Okay. Yeah, so I worked for the bank for numerous years, and what I did is I moved around different jobs within the bank, so still working for the same company in essence. But I think if anyone's worked for a big company, you kind of know what it's like. You can get a new job without having to move.
Yeah.
So the majority of my time I worked for the bank, I actually had a really good time, and I had a lovely bosses. Still in touch with a few of my bosses and many of my many friends now from the bank. But the last boss I had was not great, and I was kind of I was on a trip actually in Nepal, and we were doing the Annapurna circuit, and everyone was asking the questions. So there was a group of 8 of us, I think, all solo travellers. And we were just chatting, what do you do for work? All those sorts of questions. And I basically started talking about my job and how I didn't like it. You know, we just got to the end of the conversation and was like, I was like, right, actually, I need to do something about this. I need a plan. I need a plan to get out of this job that I don't like. And my plan at the time, this was January 2017, was to set up a website. And I was like, in 3 years' time, I'm going to hand my notice in. That was like, that was my goal. I had like a 3 year plan. As you know, it fast forwarded because 6 months later I was made redundant. So I had done a lot of work on the website and I just thought, right, let's give it a go. That's really how it set off. I mean, I could have gone and got another job when I got made redundant, yeah. But I just thought this is my opportunity and I'm going
to
take it.
Was the website at that point able to start to support you, or at least give you a glimpse of hope that it could support you? Or was it like a really...
No
nothing at all. Oh, wow.
No. So what I did on the road trip I mentioned around all the UK national parks, I reached out to different accommodation in each national park, and I asked them if they would if they were able to host me, and in return I would write a comprehensive review on my website, and also I'd do some social media. Now, bearing in mind at the time, the website didn't have a lot of traffic going to it. I was still in the stage of learning about SEO and all those sorts of things that help get traffic. So it was a bit of a, let's just see if I can do this, and let's see if anyone will say yes. And people did say yes. I had B&Bs, campsites, glamping pods, hotels. I had a right mix, really.
Oh wow.
And I kind of did my 2 month trip and I was like, and then I came back home and I was like, oh my god, I've got all this work.
Write it up now and put the photos and remember which photos are from which places. Wow. That's remarkable. Well, that answers my other question, is kind of where did you stay on this road trip? But obviously everywhere that was happy to offer you space in return for, you know, a write-up. That's quite remarkable. So you stepped off the corporate, out of corporate lifestyle into being a full-time, what do you call yourself in terms of profession now? What do you have?
So
working full-time.
Time. Sometimes I call myself a blogger. Yeah. Sometimes I call myself a content creator. Yeah.
That's the trendy new word, isn't it?
And obviously I do mountain guiding as
you
well.
Do, yeah.
So like, you know, mountain leader. So I don't know, just make it up each time someone asks.
So you stepped off, became let's say content creator, is a new trendy word, isn't it, these days for blogging and, you know, whatever. Encompasses all. And suddenly the thing that you love becomes the thing you do. Does that change your feeling around, or did it? Has it at any points changed the feelings around adventure and outdoors and being active in a negative and a positive way for you?
It's interesting. So obviously, I've got the second website I set up with, which was Peak District Walks, and that's... I mean, it does what it says on the tin.
Yeah,
sort of
it's
thing.
Very
it is
comprehensive, isn't it? List of
walks.
Yeah, it's great. I've used it a few
times.
So
I guess for me, when I visit the Peak District now, it is more worky than leisure, unless I go and do a route that I've already done, because then I know I don't have to write it up because I've already walked that route. But if there's a route that I'm doing, it's a new route, I will write it up for the website. It's very rare that I'll go and do a new walk in the Peak District and it won't go on the website. So most of the time I would say, say like 80% of the time I go to the Peak District now, it is for work, in the sense of writing the routes up, as well as the guided walks. But then I do other trips. So I'll go to the Lake District and I have that as kind of pure non-work, if you know what I mean. The only side of the Lake District for me that's work would be if I was doing a long distance trail, which I did last year. So I did the Cumbria Way and I wrote that up on the website. But that was one specific trip. And then Instagram, like maybe photos and stuff like that. So, but that's not... I would have done that anyway, sort of thing. So
sure,
feel too much.
And in terms of kind of getting the idea for a walk, or even getting an idea for a content. So, if you have an idea for a trip and you make some content around that, do you have the? Do you start with, I'm going to go for a walk here and just build a bit of content on my website around that? Or do you sort of plan the walk and then sort of go and do the walk and then turn it into content afterwards? Does that make sense? So what comes first, like the walk itself, and you build the content with that, or the plan, and then you just go do the walk?
Yeah. So how I do it is, so for example, the Brecon Beacons walk, it's called the Beacons Way. I'm doing that in May. So you can't just magic yourself there without doing any planning preparation. I mean, you can, but I do a minimal amount of planning and preparation, checking my kit, all those sorts of things. So what I actually do is, instead of having a notebook to write down all my, this is what I'm doing, I just put it straight onto my website. So when I'm researching how to get there, or I'm researching the start and the end of the trail and all those sorts of things, or I'm researching, I'll tell you what I was doing the other day. I was researching the shops on the trail so I can work out my resupply points. So I'm doing all that work anyway because I need to. So I just literally put it straight on the website. Sometimes I've actually published before I've gone on the walk, and I'll put a, hi everyone, this is what I'm about to do. Sometimes I run out of time, so it doesn't ever get to that point, but all the content's there. So when I come back, I then just update it, and I try and do it fairly soon when I've come back. I'm saying that I'm thinking about my trail from the Isle of Man last year. I've still not written up, that's in draft format, but you know, that's just the way it goes. Yeah,
you must have a vast back catalogue though of all sorts of drafts and, you know, ideas that you get. I mean, there's an infinite amount of things to kind of write about and to share really within outdoors.
Yeah, there is. That's the problem. And I'll kind of like go on a walk and then I'll come back with, you know, another 20 ideas in my head. Yeah. So I have to be careful.
Do you, when you're walking, even if it's the Lake District and, you know, not your sort of working walk environment, which is clearly the Peak District, do you ever walk or do something active and think, even if you're not planning to go out and share it, do you always get that kind of creeping feeling where you think, oh, I really should be doing something around this work? No, because
I don't.
You don't.
I'm kind of like, if I ever feel like, So it's similar to like thinking about Instagram. If I ever think like, oh, I need to post, then I stop myself because I feel like it should never be I need to. It should be I want to. If I'm kind of going, so I've not posted, I don't know for how long on my Instagram because I've just been busy. And I think the other night I was like, oh, I really should post. I've not done anything for a while. And I'm like, oh, sod it. I've been busy.
Yeah.
That's life, isn't it?
But that's a very healthy.
When I'm on trail next month, I can post plenty
post
of stuff
because
that's what I'll be doing. Yeah. And I enjoy doing it as well. I enjoy sharing the journey. I mean, but
that's a very healthy relationship with then the technology that you use to share your walks and to create the content. That sounds really interesting. And, you know, where did then this interest in creating content around the outdoors begin? Because I know a lot of people, you know, in macro form or in a sort of bigger, larger scale like yourself, love to create content, whether that's sending a photo to a friend and family, having an Instagram feed, you know, even just taking pictures is all creating content. But where did your interest in creating content on this scale, you know, written format and video format begin?
I'm not really sure. I think I've always enjoyed taking photos. So if you look back on trips that I've done, I vividly remember. So me, my sister, and my brother, we went to New Zealand in 2011, and me and my sister we had little cameras, and we were there for 5 weeks, and we both took 3,000 photos.
Oh wow!
Each.
Yeah.
Yeah, in 5 weeks.
Was that on disposable cameras at that time, or was that
no? It was
digital?
Disposable. It was a proper. It was like a little point and shoot, okay. But it was a pretty decent quality one. And when I came back from my trip, I spent ages looking through all the photos, picking the best ones, and then I made a photo book with them. So I've got like a really nice memory book of my New Zealand trip. And I did that for quite a few trips until really the website came along, because the website sort of became first in that sense. And then I was like, I haven't got time to create a photo book. But then all my stuff was going on the website instead of in a book. So instead of being a photo book that's in my bookshelf, it became content on the website that everyone could see.
Okay, that's interesting. And in terms of, this is a question that I recently heard another podcaster ask a guest, and actually I thought it was a really good question to put to you and see what your opinion was, what it was.
I'm intrigued what you ask.
So in terms of the influence you have, in terms of the, you know, you will publish a picture or you'll put a walk on your website, whether that's a trail in the Peak District or the Cumbria Way or whatever it might be, naturally there'll be an additional amount of traffic that, you know, foot traffic that will go to that place because you've perhaps shared this new walk. How do you feel about that? Because I know a lot of, or some content creators are, I swing into one of two camps. Myself and Chrissy were talking about this the other day, and I'll keep my kind of opinion about it a little bit reserved here, if you don't mind. But how do you feel in terms of somebody who's actually creating this content and sharing these spaces in terms of the traffic people that you're kind of create because of that? Do you, because it's not a negative thing, by the way, I'm not sort of pointing out a negative.
No, I'm just like, well, there's so many places to go
That's all right. No problem if you do. Because I mean, I know, like, for instance, online, I've seen, the sharing of some places was sort of, you know, I'm not going to tell you where this is, but I'm going to share it otherwise.
You're
very much, I'm sharing this with you, but I am going to tell you where it is. Do you ever feel that the need to sort of reserve where you walk, or are you quite happy to openly just share where you're going? Or do you, perhaps if you're going somewhere, you kind of think, actually, I don't want to share this. You just don't have a need or feel to share it.
Well, if I don't want to share it, I don't share it. But I mean, places, things like, so the National Trails, the National Trails.
Yeah, of course, they're shared anyway. That
make a difference. Peak District walks. So I'll probably share a mix of, you know, your regular, what's the word? My brain's gone to full
stop. Is this 9 o'clock recording time?
It's 9 o'clock. I'll say I'm screwed now.
Sorry.
Possibility. So the Peak District. So we'll write walks about Mam Tor, Kinder Scout, Chrome Hill. So they're all kind of the ones that people already know about. And I will share other routes as well. And I just think it's good because you're kind of sharing the distribution. So say 20 people wanted to go to the Peak District, for example, and the only place they've ever heard of is Mam Tor, they're all going to go to Mam Tor. They go on my website and they're like, oh, there's Mam Tor, and there's like, but there's this route up Mam Tor and there's this route up Mam Tor. So it, again, you've got those 20 people, you're sending them off in different directions.
Yeah, they're not going up the main track. They're just, you know, the distributor.
So there's that. Yeah. And then there's also kind of like even just little routes that they might not have even thought of, like High Wealden, for example, or Bradwell Moor, somewhere like that. That's just, you know, it's lovely, really nice views, but it's not, when you say to someone, what's your top 10 in the Peak District, or what's the top 10 places you've heard of in the Peak District? They're not going to be there, are they?
No, of course not. It's going to be your Dovedale, Stanage, Mam Tor, etc.
Exactly, yeah. So if you can kind of distribute where people are going, if people want to go to the Peak District, they're going to go, and they'll go to the places that they've heard of and the places that are kind of, you know, a feature in Instagram and get sort of 1,000 likes and all that sort of thing, because that's what gets people going there. But
Great answer. Great answer, because I butchered that question asking it to you. So
I butchered the answer.
No, it's great. No, I butchered that question. I had something in my mind which was totally different, and what came spilled out was the complete opposite. But anyway, thank you. So moving on. I wanted to, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, like working, for you being a sort of working adventurer, essentially, you know, you're a content creator, an outdoor content creator. what's the reality of that in terms of how much time does Becky the traveler spend on the computer not doing any traveling to how much do you actually spend getting out and doing the content? You know, the fun bit that people really would love to do, walk in for,
yeah,
for a living.
So, okay, so I'll break it down. So if I go and do a walk in the Peak District, I'll do a full day walk. And from that full day walk, I might create two new walks for Peak District walks, or I might create three, or I might just do one. And then I'll come home and it'll probably take me a day and a half working solidly, which, to be honest, I never do. I always have breaks in between. But actually, looking at time, it would be so I would say kind of like it's not far off sort of 50-50 for actual going for a walk and doing the admin. But I do kind of manage how much I go. So sometimes I'll go and do like a long distance hike, and then I'll be hiking every day for X amount of days. So when I did the Pennine Way in the winter Pennine Way, that was 15 days. And it probably took me, I don't know, say 2 days to write the content up afterwards.
But it's different, isn't it? For your long distance trails that you do, your route guides are really comprehensive, but they're less of a sort of turn by turn direction and more of a, this is what you pack. This is the best time to go. You know, this is places to stay. This is my experience on the trail, etc. Whereas your Peak District walks are very much a turn by turn, you know, detailed route description with images showing places that you're going to see along the way.
Yeah, so which means they do take longer. Yeah.
And I guess for you actually walking, it involves writing down when you're walking or recording.
No, I don't write anything when I walk. I just take pictures.
Oh, do you? And you remember it through the pictures.
So I will start in the car park, take a picture of the car park, and then I'll head off out, and then it will be turn right at this signpost, so I'll take a picture. So I'll literally take a picture of every single junction. So what that means is if I get home and write the walk up immediately, I can literally do it off the top of my head, and I can have the pictures, and I'll be like, what did that signpost say? So I can give a bit more detail. But the benefit of that is in 6 months' time, if someone says to me, oh, we did your walk and this wasn't there or whatever, I can go back and I can then look at my photos and I can be like, did I make a mistake? Did they go the wrong way? Has something changed? So like recently, Chrome Hill Walk, they've replaced a load of gates. No, they haven't replaced a load of gates. They've replaced a load of stiles with gates. So my route instructions at the moment, they still say go over the stile, but it's not, it's a gate. You'd like to think that people have got a bit of common sense and they'll spot that it's a brand new gate that's been fitted. Because I've got that on my list of things.
Did you get
to
messages
and,
about that then, with people noticing that those were, you know, they're changed?
No, I haven't had anything quite like that, but I get a couple of messages every now and again. Someone, I think it was after the storms last year, right, and someone messaged me saying trees knock this bridge over or those sorts of things, and there's nothing I can do about that, but people are lovely, yeah, and they'll send me a message saying, oh, just to let you know that I spotted this or I noticed this, and
Okay, interesting. I thought the balance would actually be swing more towards the writing up and the admin than it would perhaps the other side. So that's interesting. And then obviously in the mix of what you do as well, you've got you decide to become a mountain leader. Now, becoming a mountain leader is, you know, not it doesn't take 5 minutes. It takes a lot of walking experience, and then you need the training days and the qualification days. What made you decide to become a mountain leader in addition to what you do as well? And, you know, how's that been in terms of, you know, taking groups out? Is it something that you do quite often or just dip into occasionally?
So I decided I wanted to do the qualification. Sorry, I just told you I was going to struggle.
It's all right. Don't worry about it. It's fine. This is an informal podcast, and, you know, despair and laughter is totally okay.
I think it's because, yeah. You know, from what you just said a minute ago, I was like, oh, I really ought to say that. So can we just,
yeah, of course.
I'm just going to answer a bit from the last question, because how you made it sound, it's like, oh, it's not like a piece of piss, but like it's easy to do the website. And what's happened is I've done loads of work beforehand. So I'm just going to, okay, just cut this bit out. Right. I'm just going to set start. So I would also say with the website that although I'm at the point now where I'll go out on a walk and I'll write the walk up, I have actually put a lot of hours into the website prior to this point. So researching the SEO, actually setting the whole website up and creating the pages, the templates, all that sort of stuff. So that's a massive admin side of things that really within the first probably 6 to 9 months with Peak District Walks, because I was really focused on that, I'd say the admin outweighed the hiking side of things.
I'm sure, yeah.
But now it's flipped round where I can go out and enjoy a hike and not have to do quite so much admin. So,
yeah. It's, I mean, I'm not going to go nerd out about it with you. But yeah, I know full well that anything, you know, setting up a website, even with the tools that we have now, is a time consuming, you know, even with all the self-build tools.
I felt like I sounded a bit flippant going, oh, I don't do much sort of thing, but I have done a hell of a lot of work to get to where I wanted to be. So, you know, it does look like I've got the easy life a little bit at the moment, but it doesn't just fall in your lap sort of thing. You've got to put the work in.
Of course. And then even when you put the page together, it's formatting it so it's coherent and making sure everything lines up. And then you've got your SEO to do on each page. You've got to wait for it to actually do something and appear on Google so people can find it and come to the website. So there's all that work as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
So I thought that was just useful to mention, because if someone's thinking they're going to start a website,
and it's just going to blow up. And, yeah, it doesn't happen.
So I didn't start earning money on Peak District Walks for, I can't remember exactly. I think it was probably 6 to 8 months it took me on Peak District Walks.
And that's being able to do it full time as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which speaks volumes about how difficult it actually is to turn, you know, a website into something that does provide, you know, beer money alone to, you know, let alone, you know, creating, you know, allowing you to do this full time.
So basically, because obviously I've got that as that's my business model, I actually decided that I wanted to, for people that are self-employed, you'll generally find that they have quite a few different income streams.
Yeah, manages the risk, doesn't it?
Just managing the risk and having a contingency. I mean, we all know it happened when COVID came along certain business models just didn't work.
And I'll ask you about that in a minute, because I'm interested how that affected you.
So I decided really that it was the sensible decision to go down the mountain leader route, but on the flip side, I did used to do kind of free insta meets with kind of, I used to have up to like groups of 10, quite small groups, and it was a bit of a socializing thing, and
a led walk. Sort of come at your own risk.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. But I absolutely love doing it. And then kind of I was like, you know, let's do the mountain leader training. And I was kind of like, had it in the back of my mind that I wanted the qualification, but I was kind of like, look, let's just see how we go sort of thing. And then really just went from there. And obviously I got the qualification last November. And I work with Emma Holland. Emma and I do guided walks with map reading. We have one of those a month and they are really, really popular. I love working with Emma. I enjoy doing it. But once a month is fine for those, that style. You know, it's a good thing. It works, but it doesn't take over my life. Me and Emma, we chat about the route we're going to do. I get it on the website, and then we let the bookings come in. If we find that it's, you know, not filling up as quickly as we wanted, we might put some stuff on social media. But the last few walks have literally all sold out really quickly, so just not needed to worry about that. And then I've just started doing a few other guided walks without NMAP reading. So myself and Jess Mather, she's also a mountain leader and one of my very close friends. And why not work with your best mate, eh?
Yes, yeah, why not?
So we did the Edale Skyline a couple of weekends ago, and that went absolutely brilliantly. And I've got another one booked in now for June. So it's kind of like when it's the balance, I think, between not doing too many and also earning a bit of income from it, but, you know, not having it take over your life. And I always said that I didn't want to be a mountain leader full time. I wanted to do it part time because I wanted to go off and do my own adventures.
Yeah. So it fits into your lifestyle in a way that you wanted to, rather than you're kind of using that essentially for survival. I mean, I've seen mountain leaders and the reality behind that job full hand when it's somebody's entire living. And it's, you know, it's not as half as glamorous as what it might look like on paper, if that's all you do. You know, a lot, because I used to work with a couple of outdoor centres who used mountain leaders to, you know, run or lead the courses. And it involves rocking up at sort of, you know, on a weekend and sleeping out your van, and then belaying kids up, you know, wind gather rocks, getting paid pittance while you're a freelancer. And obviously there's deductions that come out of that, which are higher often than being employed. And then, you know, you do that all summer, and then in the winter you're trying to find a job at Cotswold Outdoor, and that is reality for a lot of people. And that's
the thing. It's kind of like, I don't want to be working every weekend in the summer when it's like beautiful weather. I want to be going off and doing my own adventures. But I'll do some work as well. I've signed up to do some Duke of Edinburgh leading as well during June, July, August. I'm doing a few dates, and I'm really looking forward to that. I think it will just be something a bit different. And I think a few people said you'll either love it or hate it, but got to give it a go, haven't you?
that's really interesting. Nice. So another question for you, moving away from sort of working and blogs and things like that.
Good. No more work questions.
Yeah, no more work questions. We'll start move a little bit into long distance hiking questions here. As a long distance hiking podcast, I don't make this all about long distance hiking, but it's sort of the prerequisite and the theme of it. But obviously there's more to life than that as well. So, but moving to the long distance hiking, you did a walk of over 950 miles. Now, when I first read that, I thought, oh, you know, Beck has done, you know, the Land's End John O'Groats, but you didn't. You did Lowestoft in Suffolk too. I'm not even going to try, and I've got it in front of me. A lighthouse.
Go on.
No.
What did you say?
I haven't even said it yet. Ards and the Mansion Lighthouse in Scotland.
That was so mean of me. It's Ardnamurchan.
Ardnamurchan. There you go. I got it. Yeah. Lighthouse in Scotland. So why that route? Because I've never heard of that. And was that a route that was an established, obviously not signpost going from one to the other, as there isn't with Land End John O'Groats? But was it a route that was something you had?
So it's similar. It's similar in that Land's End to John O'Groats, there are routes that people go, yes, but there isn't a set.
There isn't a signpost. Yeah, route. But there's agreeable routes that, you know, are quite commonly followed. Is it the same for this particular route?
I think I found one other person that had done it, maybe someone that has cycled it. It's the furthest easterly point of Britain to the furthest westerly point of mainland Britain. And how I did it with a friend of mine, and we basically looked at what's the best way to go. So Google Maps was, as the crow flies, I think it was, I don't know, 500 miles or something.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I don't want to go that way. I want to go the pretty way. So we then linked up national and local trails to head up, I really wanted to do the Pennine Way, and that was kind of like made sense to do that as the middle chunk. So it was then finding trails to link to the start at Edale, and then from Kirk Yetham over to Ardner Merchan. So within that hike, so we did the Norfolk Coast Path. Then we jumped on a few local ones. I think there was like the Leicestershire. No, we didn't go through Leicestershire. That's an absolute lie. We went through, there was a couple of local ones, Cambridgeshire and Lincolnshire. I can't remember. Oh, that was it. It was the Nene Valley Way that was basically full of stinging nettles. So let's not talk about that one. Then hopped onto the Derwent Valley Heritage Way, which takes you from up Derby through to Lady Bower. Then jumped on Pennine Way all the way to Kirk Yetham. Then from Kirk Yetham, it was St Cuthbert's and the John Muir all the way to Milngai, which is the start of the West Highland Way, up the West Highland Way to Fort William, and then across from Fort William. And there was no trails for that section. We weren't even sure whether there was paths. there's very limited information on the maps that part of the mapping. But yeah, we found a way through and made it there. And so yeah,
was that I'm assuming that was carrying your own kit as well for the entire
while camping, yeah. and carrying our own kit.
How long did that take you?
That was 57 days it took.
And was this before or after you, you know, became self-employed as well? Just trying to.
This was after.
Okay, great. Yeah. What was this just sort of an idea on a whim, or was there sort of more behind it than that? You just.
My friend approached me actually. He lived at the time in Nottinghamshire, not too far away, and he'd been to what's called the Yesterval. Yes tribe. Yeah. He'd been to one of the festivals and heard about all these cool things to do, and he'd I don't know if someone had cycled the route, but he'd basically got the idea and he wanted to talk to someone about it, and he was like, Becky knows about hiking, I'll talk to her. So we went for a pint in the pub and had a chat about it, and I think about 2 hours later I was hiking it with him.
Oh well, so you didn't hang around then, you kind of started quite quickly after sort of just even thinking about it, just on a whim really. That's and obviously prior to that you'd done a long distance hiking abroad and so on. Going back to your sort of long distance hiking experience, particularly in the UK, what was your first trail that you decided to do in the UK, first long distance trail?
My first trail was Hadrian's Wall. And I did Hadrian's Wall in 2010 with my brother and sister. And it was Rachel's idea. And she did some of the planning. I think me and Rachel did most of the planning and John just rocked up.
Okay.
But yeah, so we did that. We caught the train to Newcastle, set off at about 12 o'clock. And I vividly remember walking along, because you walk along the River Tyne under all the bridges, which is lovely. Really, really interesting way to start a trail. And I know some people don't like it, but I'm a fan of all the bridges and everything, so I really liked it. But I vividly remember I'd packed my kit and I was wearing trail shoes, but I'd also got my hiking boots with me.
Oh, you were carrying them as well? As you do.
So I had my hiking boots tied on the back of my bag, swinging, and you know, just every step,
yeah,
they just
sort
of
a pendulum and throws you
in and just banged into. And I think we'd done quite a big day on that first day. Well, it felt like a big day to me, and I was just like, I can't carry this bag anymore. And my brother carried it for me for a little bit along by the river, I remember, because I was just like, yeah, this is too much in here. And then we got to the the first place, and I can't quite remember exactly how it happened, but it was either the first place or the second place, and I found this leaflet for baggage transfer. It's like, hello.
I know where this is going. Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, rang him up. I was like, yeah. And I basically then carried just minimal stuff each day and sent my stuff off.
I'm really glad you said that, actually, because I think baggage transfer is sort of one of these things no one ever kind of talks about. You know, don't see on Instagram, do you, that I've walked, you know, a trail, but Sherpa van carried my bags for me. So I'm really, really glad you said that. Is that a baggage transfer company's, you know, service you've used since as well? Or?
I don't think I have. I think I just learned not to pack so much.
Fair enough.
Because this was, bear in mind, the Hadrian's Wall was my first, as I said, it was my first long distance trail. And I didn't have a network of people who did hiking. You know, there wasn't an Instagram. I don't know if there was an Instagram, but I certainly wasn't on it at that stage in my life. And so I didn't have anyone to kind of ask. It was just, I took what we would normally take on day hikes. So I had packed a picnic blanket. And as I said, hiking boots and trail shoes. I mean, there's just absolutely no way I'd take that sort of stuff. Yeah. And I think you learn from experience.
I think carrying
the best way.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a rite of passage, though, isn't it? Carrying way too much, you know, on your first.
Yeah. Oh, you always carry way too much, but there's extremes of way too much, and I think some people get it almost right first time. Some people get it really wrong, like me.
And which long distance hiking trails in the UK particularly have stood out for you as being sort of really memorable experiences in a positive way?
I don't think this will be a surprise to you, Matt, but I think the Pennine Way has a little place in my heart, having done it three times now.
Is it three times? Because I know you recently walked it. Did you manage to walk it? It was a couple of months ago, wasn't it, when we had storms and you had to call it off?
I set off in February. I was planning to set off slightly earlier in February, but some named storms came along and kind of my plan.
But you did it again in February after the storms had passed. Brilliant. And what is it then about the Pennine Way that keeps on drawing you back into it? Because it's not the easiest long distance trail. But
I think part of it is, so as I said, we used to go hiking in the Peak District with my brother and sister. And my brother was always used to point out the Pennine Way and was talking about the Pennine Way. And so, you know, you'd have the conversation about how far it is and all these sorts of things. And I was just in my head, I was like, I don't think I'd ever be able to do that. That would be too far. So I'd kind of, you know, looking back years now, I'd written it off in my head that it was too hard to do and I wouldn't be able to do it. I felt like the Pennine Way was too long. And then obviously it was quite ironic. I ended up doing it as part of the 950-mile hike. And then after I'd done that, I had this urge to do it again because I'd always wanted to wild camp the Pennine Way, and I'd always wanted to do it solo, but obviously I didn't quite have that confidence that first time, which is why I did it. Well, I was doing the hiking with my friend anyway, so that was like non-negotiable. I couldn't really ditch him just going, I want to
do
this
it on
solo.
My own. Yeah, walk 100 metres behind.
Yeah, so obviously I did it in the summer, wild camping solo, which is how I always had it in my head. I was like, you know, I really wanted to do it in that style. I enjoy wild camping. I enjoy the freedom of, you know, not knowing where you're going to end up each day. And then I finished it in the summer and I was just like, oh, I love this trail. I really want to do it again. And then that's where the idea to do it in winter came. And I was kind of like, is that mad? And I put a post in a Facebook group. And everyone was like, oh, it's too dangerous. No, you're going to die. Like, basically, it was like so dramatic.
It wasn't my Facebook group, was it?
No, it wasn't. Okay. No,
I would have shut that nonsense down.
But it was basically like, I mean, there were some positive people, but there were also some people who were treating me as if I didn't have a clue what I was doing. Right. And, you know, oh, you'll end up having mountain rescue out. And I'm like, right, well, you don't know me, because if I was ever in that situation, then, you know, well, I'd like to think I wouldn't have got in that situation, because yeah, I'd have assessed the risk properly.
You've got enough experience to be able to gauge when it's sensible.
And I'm happy to go, no, I'm not doing it.
Like,
or
you did,
I'm stopping here.
Yeah, but like you did with the storm, you made a decision that wasn't safe based on your experience.
And I'm glad I made that decision. Yeah. It was 100% the right decision, because there were still strongish winds when I set off on the Tuesday, and they were blowing me around. And I was like, the storm winds were like another 10 mile per hour stronger than this. So you just kind of like, yeah, I totally made the right decision, and I was happy with that. But
do you prefer doing trails solo, or do you prefer walking them with somebody else or a group of people?
I like doing both, really. I don't think I necessarily could say one way or the other, because I think they're both very different. The thing I like about doing it solo is I choose when, where, how. I make 100% of the decisions. When I've hiked with other people, it's always been more of a social hike, a social event. So doing the Cumbria Way with Nick and Jess, when I did that in June, we stopped off and, you know, we went to the pub for lunch, and we went to the pub in the evening, and we stopped for breakfast, and, you know, it was lovely, it was leisurely, and we had a laugh and all that sort of stuff. And it's not to say that I don't do those things when I do it on my own, but I'm very much, when I'm on my own, I'll just go for it sort of thing. Yeah. I enjoy stopping and having breaks, but I also enjoy hiking late. So I've got quite good stamina, so I can just keep going until late. I'm not particularly fast. And quite often people will think I'm fast because of the miles that I might do in a day. Yeah. They'll be like, oh wow, you're really fast. But I'm like, no.
You just walk.
I'm like, I'll walk at a steady pace. I wouldn't say slow, but I'd say I'll walk at a steady pace. I'll stop if I want to stop. I'll take pictures. I'll dip my feet in the stream, all those sorts of things. But I'm happy to add in a few extra hours later on to make up that time. Well, that's how I see it, sort of thing. And yeah,
that walking at a steady pace and having that endurance seems to be something I'm noticing is this sort of magic source for walking longer distances. You know, giving yourself the whole day to walk rather than thinking, right, I've got to get 20 miles done in 8 hours. You know, instead you go, well, I've got all day to do this because I've not got anything else to do, and giving yourself the freedom to stop and dip your feet somewhere, or stop and have lunch and light up the stove.
Yeah, I think that's the case when you're wild camping or camping at a campsite, especially because, you know, when you get to where you're going to pitch, you've got to put your tent up, get your food, go to sleep. There's not that many jobs to do. But if you're staying in a nice Airbnb, or, you know, even a hostel with a shower, you kind of like, you want to make the most of those facilities.
Of course, yeah.
In my head, I'm kind of like, if I'm paying for a like Airbnb, 100%. I want to get there and I want to get my money's worth.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, like you want to, and often they're in a town and you want to stop in the town and have a look around.
Yeah.
And, yeah, of course, 100%. But yeah, for wild camping or staying in campsites, then I think definitely, you know, it pays to sort of take your time on the trail.
I think it does depend on the time of year as well. So when I did it in, you know, my February one, sunset was 5:30.
So less hours on the trail. Did you walk into evening then when it was dark?
No. I didn't. I'd made a decision that I wasn't hiking in the dark. Okay. I was like, no, that's not happening. Yeah. So I would hike until probably like 6:30 at the latest, something like that. Yeah. Sort of dusk time, depending on where I was, and generally I was, you know, fairly remote already, so I could kind of be flexible on finding a spot.
Okay, nice. So last kind of couple of questions, because we've been recording for nearly an hour now.
You can tell, can't we? Loosen the plot.
That's good. It's good. You're doing great. I understand it's past your bedtime, as you've made that clear. But that's fine. Your experience as, you know, an outdoorsy person, a walker, you know, a runner, is consistently sort of growing and expanding. What's next for you? Kind of what excites you? What do you plan to do, especially as the world opens up again and, you know, there's more, you know, trails away from the UK? Or are you very happy to sort of at the moment just ticking off trails in the UK and expanding your experience here? What's next for you?
I think what's next is something we touched on at the beginning of the beginning of the conversation, and that's my little van, Dennis.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, let's go to that. So what's the plan?
I've wanted a van for a while, and I finally took the plunge on a van, and I bought it 2 weeks before I started the Pennine Way, which you might think is the most ridiculous timing ever, but I just got to the point where I felt I'd always been saying to myself, oh, it's not the right time, it's not the right time, it's not the right time. And I just was like, oh, I just need to do this. There's never going to be a right time. There's always going to be something that I'm doing. I just need to get the van, and then I can start doing stuff on it and start planning and all that sort of thing. So I am... basically, I'm converting it myself into a basic camper van. And by basic, I mean I'm not having electrics, I'm not having fancy kind of cooking and all that sort of thing. I've got my camping stove, I've got those sorts of bits of kit. But I do want to make it look nice. I want it to be my little, I want it to home be my own little like, home sort of thing. It's basically like a giant tent, really, is how I'm looking at it. And that is my focus at the moment. And I feel like once I've done that and finished on that project, or at least done a big chunk of it, then I feel like I can then start making a few more plans. I've thought to myself, well, maybe I could go to Europe, and maybe I could do this, and maybe I could do that. But I'm just I'm balancing the trips that I've already got in at the moment with doing the work on that. So I think we'll get that done first before I start coming up with any more extravagant ideas of things to do.
And how involved is building a camper van? Is it more than you expected it to be, or easier than you thought it would be?
I think it's very individual. It's up to you how much research you can do. So say, for example, looking at something really simple, or not necessarily simple, but fairly basic, is insulation. Hmm. So first of all, it's, do you have insulation? Yes or no? You do the research. Then you've got sound deadening, and it's like, well, what the hell's sound deadening? Not what is it? But it's like, you know, why do I need it?
That's the silver tape, isn't it, that goes all in the inside?
A lot of silver going on, And then it's like insulation, and what insulation do I have? Then people throw in vapor barrier. And then it's like, you're having a vapor barrier, you're not having a vapor barrier, and your head's like going like this. And before you know it, you've gone down like a, you know, you've spent 4 hours looking at sound deadening sheets or, you know, insulation. and that's before you've even bought anything or started to try and get it fitted in your van. So, but then you can just go to the flip side, and you can just go, right, I'm buying that, I'm doing that, and not go into it. But I've wanted to research it properly. For me, I want to do this, and I want to do it once, and I want to do it right. So that was kind of, that's my plan. I'm also adding guides on the website for every single section that I'm that I'm doing. Because I was like, actually, there's a lot of van guides out there, but there's not loads that assume you have zero knowledge. And I've read quite a few, and it's kind of like they'll sort of brush over something, and I'll be like, I've got no idea what you're talking about. So I've gone in like a really, like the beginner of the beginner level because that's where I am as regard to it. And also the van I've got, which is a Vauxhall Vivaro. Mine's a new shape Vauxhall Vivaro, so there's not many guides on that particular van. So I'm kind of doing it more bespoke to my van, which hopefully will be useful to a few people that will be getting that van in years to come.
Wonderful. Very, very envious. I mean, we've considered doing a van conversion ourselves, but as a family of four, you know, myself, my partner and two young boys, obviously the time constraints of that are not on our side. But also the logistics of having a van that works for the family, we would, you know, ideally want something that houses, you know, all of us. So there's, you know, we've decided for now to pull back on the idea, but there is a lot of information out there, and you're right, a lot of it does assume that, you know, the reader does have an understanding of some level, basic level of understanding on it. And that's where we got caught up as well. There's, you know, an overwhelm of information, and it often doesn't start with the beginning.
There's a lot of things that make it sound easy. Oh, you just put the flooring in, or you just do this. And then you get in your van, and your van's, you know, everyone who's done a van conversion knows this.
Yeah.
Vans aren't straight.
No.
They've got all sorts of like weird, sort of like go in at places.
Yeah, and wood is straight, like, isn't it? Wood comes in.
Well, there's that as well. Yeah, wood's not straight either. But, and then, so I really wanted to put cladding on my ceiling. And then my mate Ben came round the other day, and he's like looking at it, and he's like, "What are you thinking of doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm just going to put it on the ceiling." And he's like looking, he's like, "There's not really much metal between your ceiling and
the outside,
open air." Yeah. So I've basically gone, "Yeah, that's actually quite a good point, Ben." Yeah. So we've come up with a new plan for that.
Right.
But that was one of those really little things that everyone's like, "Yeah, you just put the frame in and then you fix your cladding." But if I'd gone ahead and done that in my van, I'd have like 20 holes in the roof.
I guess a lot of the guides are, you know, very general. I mean, as well, I think if your van is quite a small van, isn't it, in comparison to a lot of the humongous builds?
It's small and big in the same sentence. So it's
big enough.
It's long, but it's not high.
Right.
So it looks small as well. It's quite narrow. It's quite narrow. It's quite low, but it's got a bit on the back. It's a long wheelbase, so.
Oh, okay, right. So they've got that extra room for.
We've got a bit of extra space
brilliant.
There.
I think that's important, because especially if you're living out of it. So when do you hope to finish with it?
I haven't actually set myself a timescale. No? You know.
Okay.
I don't know whether I should or not,
but
I'm literally ploughing like every single bit of spare time I've got. I'm doing that. So this morning I wrote a walk for Peak District Walks, and then I went out. What was I doing? Can't actually remember what I was. Oh yeah, I've been cutting wood today for the frame. So I'm making a frame to affix the cladding onto and cutting the wood for that, and trying to work out how it's all going to go. Because again, it's not like put the frame on, put the cladding on. There's this gap here, and there's this bit here, and I was like, well, if I do that, then that's gonna stick out, and I spent a lot of time just sat with a notebook actually today, and just drawing and trying to work out how I'm gonna do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, carpentry is difficult with a room, you know, to get straight and level. I can't imagine what it's like when you've got a van with contours and curvatures, and you know, good luck. I'm sure it'll be absolutely amazing when it's done.
It's definitely fun. If you enjoy that type of thing, it's fun. If you don't enjoy that type of thing, then you need to get someone to do it for you.
Yeah, and there's tons and tons of small businesses and bigger businesses out there that do the whole van conversion thing. Or you can just go buy a van off the shelf from a company that does professional build. Well, brilliant. I think we'll finish there. Unless you have anything else to add?
But I don't think so.
No, cool. So where?
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
That's right. We've talked about quite a lot. We've talked about Pennine Way and Beacon's Way.
We've covered plenty. I tend to keep the episodes within about an hour anyway, thereabouts. I often go over a bit.
You've got plenty to edit out now, to be fair.
No, I'm fine. There won't be a lot, too much editing. But to be honest, I try not to edit the episodes too much. I used to edit out all my ums and ers, but...
Did you?
Yeah, I kind of just keep them in because I figure it's me, and if, you know, somebody doesn't like my ums and ahs, then so be it. But yeah, so where can people find you? Where should they start if they want to just learn more about you and the walks that you publish and the work you do?
I'd say the main social media that I use is Instagram. So that's always a good point to drop me a message. So I'm over on Instagram at Becky the Traveller. Or if you want to just go and have a little nose on either of the websites, if you've got a Peak District trip coming up, then go over to peakdistrictwalks.net. Loads on there. You can also email me about that as well or message me. And then there is Becky the Traveller website as well. So again, you can go and have a look there. There's a plenty of UK trips. There's West Highland Way, Bob Graham Round, Cumbria Way, Pennine Way, loads and loads of stuff on there, as well as a few kind of hiking tips and all those sorts of things as well. Tips for wild camping and yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been really nice to speak to you.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet you finally, and we definitely have to go for a walk as well.
Yeah, well, we're so close. It'd be rude not to. It'd be lovely to go and have a walk with you at some point, and you know, talk offline as well, and get to meet you in person.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's my bedtime now, Matt. So.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic. Lovely to meet you.
All right. See you later. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Welcome back after listening to the episode. Good to have you back. I really hope you enjoyed the episode, and I would love to know what you think. Please do let me know. You can email at matthew@distancehiker.com, or you could send me a message on Facebook or Instagram. And if you really enjoy the show, like and subscribe on Apple and Spotify. So that concludes this week's episode. As always, it is fantastic to have your ears on the show. I really, really appreciate the time that you've given to listen to the episode. Next week, I've got another fantastic episode lined up for you. Sorry, in 2 weeks' time, I've got another fantastic episode lined up for you. I cannot wait to share that with you as well. So keep your eyes peeled for the next episode coming out. But for now, thank you so much for listening. Whatever you're doing the rest of your day, rest of your evening, perhaps you commute home, you're commuting to work, perhaps you're cooking, perhaps you're out on a hike, whatever it is you're doing, I hope it's a good one, and I'll see you again real soon. Bye.